So hello and welcome to this episode of the podcast Out of the Archives, which this week is called Epidemics Are Nothing New. Now, as the coronavirus epidemic is very much in the news at the moment, I thought it would be interesting to look back over how similar illnesses have affected the college in the past. Fortunately, we have a lot of records in the archives which can tell us more. The first illness to be called an epidemic to hit Wellington was in 1891, 30 years after the college had opened. And in some ways, this was the most serious because it resulted in the college being evacuated for the only time in its history. In November 1891, 41 boys were admitted to the sanatorium with what seemed to be influenza, but some had what were called catarrhal sore throats, which seemed likely to develop into diphtheria. Diphtheria is a highly infectious disease of the throat and respiratory system caused by a bacteria. It causes tissues in the nose and throat to die, forming a thick, greyish membrane, which can make it very hard to breathe or swallow. So, at the time, it was often fatal and it was taken very seriously. Medical experts were very worried about the way the outbreak seemed to be going and the infectiousness of the disease, so they decided to end the term early. On the 2nd of December, all students who were fit were sent home. However, altogether, 23 students contracted diphtheria and two of them died, as did an old Wellingtonian living on the college estate. Now, prior to this, a man called Dr. Barford had been the college doctor for over 20 years, but had been sacked about 5 years previously. And ever since then, he'd been writing letters to the newspapers, claiming that the college drainage system was very bad and that the ground around college was really unhealthy. For example, in one of the letters, he wrote, "The whole of the immediate surroundings of the college are at the present moment thoroughly saturated with sewage refuse, which creates disease germs, and the only cure that suggests itself is to pull the whole place down and re-erect it somewhere else." Now, the governors didn't want to do that, but they realised that they would have to do something decisive to stop any further illness and to be seen to be taking action. So the governors took the decision to evacuate the college so all the buildings could be disinfected and the drainage and water systems thoroughly overhauled. They immediately started looking for alternative premises to which the school could move while that was going on. They needed somewhere which could accommodate around 300 boys plus staff, and they hit upon the Imperial Hotel in Malvern in Worcestershire. We have pictures of it. It's a large Victorian hotel building. It is, in fact, now part of a school. So the Wellingtonian reported that when they got there, the boys were lodged in corridors according to their dormitories, with a tutor's room in each corridor, with a hall as large as our hall at Wellington, and many large rooms suitable for classrooms. A large swimming bath belonging to the hotel in the gardens has been placed at our disposal. A field has been hired with room for 5 football grounds, about a quarter of a mile from the hotel. For the chapel services, we have a church which stands some 30 yards from the hotel. The time-honoured institution of Grubbies is carried on, just outside the door of the hotel dining hall. All the college servants have come, all the college crockery, everything in college except the building itself. So all in all, they appeared to be set up pretty well. And they spent a term there, whilst the buildings here were thoroughly disinfected and the drains had a massive overhaul. In the archives, we have lots of reports and drawings relating to the drains at that time, which shows how seriously they took it. And at Easter, the school moved back here. And the measures appear to have worked because there was no recurrence of diphtheria or any other catastrophic illness. That's not to say that infectious diseases didn't come round with predictable regularity. They did. Almost every winter, the Wellingtonian has references to an epidemic of something or other. I think they're exaggerating by using that word. But of course, at the time, there were far more infectious diseases going around because we didn't have vaccinations against them. So for much of the college's history, there were regular outbreaks of flu, measles, mumps, scarlet fever, rubella and whooping cough. Mostly, the sick students would be cared for on site in the sanatorium, which is now the Apsleyan Health Centre. That building gradually expanded and expanded to be able to cope with more patients. Even so, when there was a big outbreak, sometimes the sanatorium wouldn't have enough room. When that happened, they might use one of the other houses as an overflow nursing centre, and then the healthy students from that house would have to be spread out among the other houses and dormitories. That's what happened in 1918. You may know that in that year, immediately after the First World War, an epidemic of influenza, also known as Spanish flu, swept through Europe and killed more people than the war had done. In the archives, we have about 50 years' worth of the matron's daily record books of who was in the sanatorium and why. And in them, you can quite clearly see how influenza quickly starts to take hold in November 1918. Soon it was massive. Hundreds of the boys, over four-fifths of them, became ill, along with many of the teachers and nearly all the college servants. There wasn't enough room in the sanny, there were not enough people to nurse the sick, and the whole place was in danger of grinding to a halt. But everyone who was able pitched in, including local people from the surrounding area, and some mothers of the students who came down especially to help, and some trained nurses who were sent down from the London hospital. Fortunately, the strain of flu which took hold here was not one of the severe ones, and so despite there being around 450 cases, none of the students or college staff died. Sadly, two of the nurses did. One of them, Miss Tidmarsh from the London Hospital, is buried in Crowthorne Churchyard. 50 years later, one old Wellingtonian recollected being the only student sent by the school to attend her funeral, and he sent a wreath for her grave to mark the 50-year anniversary. The master at that time was Mr. Vaughan. As with all the masters, you can see his portrait in the dining hall. And when he retired the following year, his tribute in the Wellingtonian recorded that Dr. Vaughan would visit the sanatorium every day or almost to see the boys there. A sick boy in the sanatorium would never go unvisited, even if the master was away in London and had to make a special journey to see that all was well. Well, that sounds lovely, doesn't it? What a caring man. However, one of the teachers, Mr. Tallboys, who was here at the time, and later wrote a history of the school, put a rather different slant on it. He wrote, "Himself a very robust man, Vaughan was somewhat impatient of illness. On his daily visits to the sanatorium, he would stride into a ward, single out a patient, and brusquely demand, 'How long is this going on for?' With a temperature approaching 102, it was not an easy question to answer." So with that in mind, you might feel that it was only fair that Dr. Vaughan himself became a patient in the flu epidemic of 1918. The next notable epidemic to hit college came in 1938, with an outbreak of polio, or infantile paralysis, as it was then called. In fact, that was numerically fairly small, just 20 cases. It was such a serious, infectious and feared disease, which could cause death or permanent disability, that it was taken very seriously. On the 17th of December, 2 days before the end of term, the first three cases were diagnosed. The master, Mr. Longdon, notified all the parents by telegram, and within 24 hours, virtually all the students had gone home, apart from a few whose parents lived abroad. Some of these, and several who had gone home, went on to develop the disease, and sadly, two died. The school was not allowed to reopen until it had been thoroughly disinfected and pronounced safe, so the students eventually came back on the 3rd of February. Overall, the master and the school were thought to have coped with the crisis very well. After this, medical advances meant that things did get better, although there were outbreaks of mumps and measles in the 1950s, and flu continued to occur quite regularly. The last proper epidemic took place in 1957 and was what was called Asian flu. Again, that was part of a worldwide pandemic, which is estimated to have killed about 2 million people worldwide in 2 years. It hit college at the beginning of the Michaelmas term 1957, and in the space of 3 weeks, 471 of the 659 boys had been affected, so over two-thirds of the students. The Stanley had the worst rate, 47 of their 49 boys became ill. And on the worst day, 71 students were taken into the Sanny in 1 day. The Sanny soon became full. In total, 7 dormitories and houses were used to nurse the sick. This time, the illness seemed not to affect anyone over the age of about 40. And so many of the teachers and their wives helped to look after the sick, carry their meals to them and so on. Again, fortunately, despite the high number affected, there were no fatalities. Things have moved on a great deal since the 1950s. We're now inoculated against many infectious diseases, and if we do fall ill, antibiotics and other medicines mean that we have a very good chance of recovery. But I thought the college might be reassured to know that even in those massive outbreaks of flu 50 and 100 years ago, there were no student deaths. That's all for today. I'll be back in another couple of weeks with more stories out of the archives.